Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Welcome to the October episode of Third Thursdays with Ruthie. I'm Ruthie Goodbow, a traditional labor attorney in Ogletree's Pittsburgh and Detroit metro offices and co-chair of our firm's traditional labor practice. Each month on this podcast, we talk about a topic related to traditional labor and labor relations. This month, I'm going to go in the weeds a little bit on the labor topic, on the issue of supervisory status under the National Labor Relations Act. This may not be one of the more exciting issues in labor, but whether or not a particular employee is deemed to be a statutory supervisor can come into play in a lot of ways. For example, when it comes to discussing labor issues, unions or unionization, how you communicate with individuals, what you'll be allowed to say, will be determined in part on whether they are a statutory supervisor or not. It can also come into play in determining whose actions and conduct can bind the company in the context, for example, of an unfair labor practice charge. And finally, it also determines who can vote in a union election, should you ever have one. I know it's a topic I've covered before, but a recent decision from the board made me think, you know, this is a good time to revisit the topic. Now, it's interesting, and this case is interesting because the decision didn't change the law or overturn some longstanding precedent. And I know oftentimes I come and I present a case that changed the law. It's very dramatic. This case is really more about the evidence that was presented and what I'm going to call for today the nuances in the application of the law. Nuances I think we should all be aware of and pay attention to when we're looking at this issue of supervisory status. So if this podcast today is just a little bit boring, I apologize, but hopefully it will be at least a worthwhile refresher. So the case is Oracle Elevator Holdco, and it was issued on September 30th. A little bit of background, some of the facts of the case. Union election is held. The vote is 7-6 in favor of the union. So there were two determinative challenge ballots. And what that means is, if those ballots had been counted, they could impact the outcome of the election. Now, I'm not going to talk about one because one was resolved. So we still have the 7-6 vote. We have one challenge ballot over which the union and the employer were fighting. So you can see how this plays out, because if that ballot is not counted, the union will win. If that ballot is counted and it's a no, it will be a tie. And as we know, tie means the union loses. The union challenged that ballot, claiming that the individual, that voter, was a supervisor under the National Labor Relations Act. The regional director found the individual to be a supervisor, so the ballot wasn't counted. The employer appealed to the board. So, a few facts about the individual whose vote was in question. So the employer serviced, repaired, and modernized elevators. And the person in question or the ballot in question belonged to an individual who worked as what was called a modernization technician from 2007 to 2018. And we'll call that role a mod tech. He was promoted to a modernization manager, which was undisputedly a supervisor position. After a few months, his title was changed to a senior modernization technician so he could help clear the backlog of work by physically working on the projects. And I'm just going to call that term a mod tech, a senior mod tech. Many of his duties changed, and one of the most significant probably factors is he went from a salary to an hourly, but his tasks and responsibilities did change. Notably, though, certain things stayed the same. For example, his email signature still had the manager title. He was still listed as a manager on the directory. And from time to time, he was introduced as a manager, but he had the title of senior mod tech. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about supervisory status under the National Labor Relations Act. So in determining whether or not an individual is a supervisor, we look to Section 211 of the Act. And under 211, it says, quick review, you're a supervisor if you hold authority to engage in one of 12 supervisory functions that are listed in Section 211. Now, this is important because you don't have to have all of these functions, or sometimes it's called the indicia of supervisory status. You don't have to have all 12. The statute specifically says any one. And those 12 functions are hire, transfer, suspend, layoff, recall, promote, discharge, assign, reward, or discipline other employees. Also includes directing them and adjusting grievances of effectively recommending such action. So it's not just that you do these things or you have the authority to do these things, but you have to exercise that authority with independent judgment. In other words, it can't just be a routine or clerical way that you do these types of things. You actually have to have or use independent judgment. So here, because the union was asserting that the senior mod tech was a supervisor, they had the burden of proving that. The board looked at four of the 12 indicia of supervisory status. The first was assignment. An assignment involves the act of designating an employee to a place, like a department, appointing an employee to a time, like a shift or overtime, giving significant duties or tasks to the employee, but that all has to be done through the exercise of independent judgment. It is not independent judgment if the decisions are dictated or controlled by detailed instructions, or there is only one self-evident choice. In other words, there is only one option, but to assign an employee to a particular task or overtime. That's not independent judgment because you have no other choice. It's right there in front of you. So at the hearing, the employer's witnesses, including the senior mod tech, the person whose vote was at issue, testified that he recommended assignments to the general manager for the general manager's final decision, and then the senior mod tech would inform employees where they'd be working. The board found that the union hadn't met its burden, that the voter used independent judgment. And that was based mostly on the quality of the testimony provided by the union witnesses. The board said there were just conclusory statements without detailed specific evidence. The undisputed testimony from the general manager was that he made his own assessment of the employee's suitability for specific projects based on the status of the project, the strengths and weaknesses of the employees. Now, he did say that he got information about the strengths and weaknesses of the employees through the senior mod tech's feedback, but he took that information and then he came to his own conclusion and decided where people should be assigned. He then gave that information to the senior mod tech, who then informed the employees. So while the union's evidence was slim, and I can understand the decision was made based on the evidence and the testimony given, I think this helps illustrate the very thin line between exercising independent judgment and not. At least on this factor, the difference was the mod tech gave information to the general manager, and the general manager then used that information to make a decision, as opposed to doing what the mod tech recommended. The second factor that, or the second function of supervisory status that the board looked at was evaluation. Now, it's important to understand that Section 211 doesn't include authority to evaluate as a supervisory function. But the board analyzes evaluations to determine whether it is an effective recommendation of promotion, wage increases, disciplines, which are part of those 12 indicia of supervisory status. The board has said preparing evaluation only confers supervisory status if the evaluation by itself directly affects wages or job status of employees. And in this case, the senior mod tech, there was evidence that he had signed some reviews and that those reviews were tied to pay raises. But here's the distinction, here's the nuance on the evaluation piece. The senior mod tech did not recommend specific ratings or pay raises, and the board found that was the distinction. So even though there was evidence that the senior mod tech signed at least one evaluation, there was no evidence of his role in determining actual ratings. So that wasn't enough to meet the union's burden. Now, there was evidence, and there in one situation, where the senior mod tech recommended a pay raise to keep an employee from leaving the company. And the board there said he did not recommend a specific level or specific amount, and there was no evidence that the general manager granted the increase without further investigation. So there was no evidence put on by the union that the general manager completely relied on the senior mod tech's input. So that was the nuance, that was the distinction there. So didn't meet the evaluation indicia. The third factor that the board looked at was the adjustment of grievances. Now, again, nuances, fine lines. In order for the adjustment of grievances to be found to be an indicia of supervisory status, the individual must actually adjust the grievance, not just resolve minor disputes or employee squabbles. And again, back to that same term, they must use independent judgment when doing it. So here, the union put on some evidence that the senior mod tech had corrected payroll problems on employee timesheets. But the employer put on evidence, and this is the evidence the board took to heart, so to speak, is that in each of those situations, the senior mod tech, all he did was contact the payroll department, and then payroll rectified the discrepancies. There's that nuance again. So even if he recommended corrections, he didn't use independent judgment in doing it. Basically, all he did is he called payroll and said, hey, the amount that was paid to this employee doesn't reflect the actual hours the person worked. And then he told payroll what the actual hours worked were. So he was, again, merely reporting information. He wasn't making the decision about whether or not or how it should be adjusted. All right, so those three go away. One last factor they looked at was effective recommendation of hire. And for that to show supervisory status, again, the recommended action has to be taken without independent investigation by a superior. So it's not simply that the recommendation is followed, nuance again, it has to be that they basically took the word of the senior mod tech without looking further into any of the issues. The only evidence that the union was able to present was that the senior mod tech made recommendations and that the individuals were hired. They didn't have any evidence of kind of what happened in the middle. Did the general manager take the senior mod tech's recommendation without any further investigation? Or did that general manager go back through the interview notes? Or did the general manager even sit in on the interview? Or did he look at the experience of the applicant? So this was a case of missing evidence, but again, a good lesson learned that, and here's where that line is. So there was no evidence as to whether or not the general manager did his own investigation or that he had consistently followed the senior mod tech's recommendations. So the board found that the union had not met its burden of proving any of the 12, and in this case, 4, indicia of supervisory status. One additional thing to kind of point out here is there are sometimes you'll hear this term secondary indicia of supervisory status. Oftentimes, there are some other elements that are taken into consideration to help bolster a finding of supervisory status. And one of those is whether or not an individual is held out as a member of management or held out as a supervisor. And that could be things like title or how somebody is introduced. And so in the initial decision, the regional director found that the fact that his email address or his title in the directory hadn't been changed is that employees still regarded him as a supervisor. And what the board made clear here, which I think is very important, is if you can't prove the primary indicia of supervisory status, then secondary indicia is completely irrelevant. So the board didn't even look at that issue. So in summary, just kind of to wrap it all up, although this decision really focused on the lack of evidence, the union's failure to meet its burden, it's really a good reminder of the nuances, the blurred line that is going to come up whenever you're analyzing whether a particular individual is a supervisor under Section 211 of the Act. It's important, I think, to look at positions you have now that may be on the board or that may be blurred or unclear, and look at them now before the issue comes up, before you have any union organizing, before you get a charge. Look at those, especially employees that are in positions like team leads or coordinators or head coordinator, something like that, because those are usually the positions that are in the middle. Look at those. Make an informed decision now as to how you would want them to be treated in a legal analysis. What position will you want to take? Because there may be some things that you need to do to bolster that status, whichever it is. So if you want them to be treated as a supervisor or deemed to position yourselves in the best possible light, look at some of those indicia supervisory status. Look at those nuances and try and bolster your position. Once you have made that decision, then treat that position accordingly. Don't let that position morph into something or evolve into something that you don't want it to become. If you've determined that you want this person to be treated as a supervisor, then make sure they're trained. Make sure they understand it. Make sure they understand that you are treating them in a supervisory role. And if they're employees, don't blur the lines. Don't have them be substitute supervisors or step in, or don't let, and this happens a lot, don't let supervisors delegate some of these indicia to their team because either they're busy or just don't want to do it. Be careful that they're not accidentally blurring the lines further because they're delegating work that should be limited to somebody in a supervisory role. All right, I think our time is up. Thanks for joining us this month. As you know, if you listen to the podcast on a regular basis, I always try to end with a quote. And today our quote, which is from film director Paul Thomas Anderson, is directly on point. I'm going to read it and then I'll let you guys decide how it's applicable to what we just talked about. He says, "I'm always looking for that nuance, that moment of truth, and can't really do that fast." Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.